Morning. We have one case on the 10:30 docket. We'll call that case now. National City Mortgage Company versus Carolyn Adams. Mr. Elmer?
Good morning.
Morning.
May it please the court. The sole issue presented in this appeal is whether the trial court erred by failing to award National City its attorney's fees when the loan agreement that was the subject of the dispute specifically provided in two provisions that attorney's fees were recoverable. Those two provisions state as follows. The lender will be reimbursed for all expenses of any kind, including without limitation attorney's fees, that may be incurred by lender in connection with or arising out of this agreement. The second provision provides, in all caps, borrower agrees that lender and its agents and attorneys will be indemnified and held harmless from any and all claims, from any and all actions, claims, demands, damages, costs, expenses, and other liabilities, including without limitation attorney's fees, that any such parties may incur or that in any way relate to or arise out of the construction of the improvements. The plaintiff appellee sued National City for dispersing a draw to the contractor on when a home was being built as part of a construction loan. There were numerous causes of action asserted. The ones that went to trial were breach of contract, debt collection practices, and there was a third cause of action. Forgive me, I can't remember what it is. The jury returned a verdict in favor of National City on each cause of action. When it came time to enter the judgment, the court entered a judgment that was a take-nothing judgment for National City but failed to award the attorney's fees. So the sole issue presented is whether the court committed error when it failed to award the attorney's fees. The answer is yes. And the reason that it was error is because under these facts and circumstances, the award of attorney's fees was mandatory, not discretionary. A trial court has no discretion to deny the award of attorney's fees where the parties have contractually bargained for the payment of attorney's fees by the non-prevailing party. And here, it's clear from these two provisions that the attorney's fees were not discretionary. They had bargained for them. And through the use of the phrase will be, which is tantamount to shall be, it was clear that the award of attorney's fees was required.
Would it be your position that if she had prevailed on her causes of action, you still got your attorney's fees?
I recognize that one could argue. The short answer is no. That would not be my position, because I don't think that's what the parties intended. But I recognize that this language does not use the word prevailing party, but I believe that's what was intended, and fortunately we're not presented with the circumstance that you posed. Furthermore, attorney's fees are proper where an indemnity contract holds a party harmless for all losses and expenses because of any claims, demands, or causes of action. That's the Monica and Powell case that we cited in our brief. And as you can see from this language, this is an indemnity. Not only is it an agreement to pay all expenses, including attorney's fees, but also to indemnify us. And that indemnity is for all expenses, and it explicitly says, including attorney's fees. Now, the reason I bring out the indemnity argument at this point is because it reinforces the fact that we're entitled to recover not only the attorney's fees through trial, but also the attorney's fees on appeal. All of the expenses, all of the fees that we incur arising out of the litigation of this contract, we're entitled to recover.
But I have a question related to the charge. And was it sufficient just to find that National City didn't breach the loan agreement? Is that the basis for the award of attorney fees? Or should there have been a separate or additional finding that said, under the terms of our contract, you know, was National entitled to indemnification?
It's an excellent question, and I understand it was brought up in the final reply filed by the appellee. The short answer is no. It was not necessary to submit that question. And the reason it wasn't is because the parties are only required to submit disputed questions of fact. Whereas here, it wasn't disputed. It was uncontroverted. It was undisputed that the claims arose under the loan agreement. We weren't required to bring that or to have such a question. Now, because that was only in the reply brief, the cases that I'm going to refer to are not in our briefing, but they completely support that argument. The first one is the Supreme Court of Texas case, T.O. Stanley Boot versus the Bank of El Paso, 847 Southwest 2nd, 218. It's a 1992 case, and the pertinent excerpt states as follows. And this was an action on a debt where the bank failed to get a finding about the amount owed. And they said, basically the amount of the debt, the notes were in evidence, the amount of the debt was in evidence, therefore you didn't need to get a finding on the amount owed, and the pertinent excerpt is as follows. Only disputed issues must be submitted to the jury. In this case, there was no dispute as to the amount of the notes or the balance due under them. The bank was entitled to recover the undisputed balance due under the notes and the stipulated attorney's fees subject to the defense of impairment of collateral. And that was a litigated issue that ultimately was decided. But just like in that case, here it's undisputed that the claim arose out of the loan agreement. If you look at the charge, the very first question is, did National City breach the loan agreement? So where the facts are undisputed and there's no controversy about it, there would be no reason to submit that question. Another case standing for the same proposition is Robertson County, Texas, versus Wymola, that's W-Y-M-O-L-A, 17 Southwest 3rd, 334. This is Austin, April of 2000. And the pertinent excerpt is, and it cites the T.O. Stanley case, assuming without deciding that the county is correct, that this determination is a question of fact, we do not believe the trial court erred in refusing to give an instruction on the issue. A fact issue that is established with uncontroverted evidence and is not in dispute should not be submitted to the jury. So same point. Here, those facts weren't in dispute. It was not necessary and, in fact, was not required to be submitted to the jury. So now let me proceed to the issue on segregation of attorney's fees, which was argued strongly at the trial court and was again mentioned here at the appeal, or was not argued at the trial court, but was mentioned here on appeal. I have 2 points there. The first is that National City was not required to segregate its attorney's fees. And the reason that National City wasn't required to segregate them is because here the contract provided that they could recover all of them. So this is not the situation which the appellate courts usually see, where there are a variety of causes of action and the law or the statutes that are applicable provide that attorney's fees can be recovered under some causes of action but not others, therefore giving rise to the requirement or need to segregate. Here we don't have that. This is tantamount to a statute that would say you're required or you are entitled to recover all of your attorney's fees. That's what this contract says. So as a result, there was no need to segregate, and that was not an oversight at the trial. It was specifically addressed. Opposing counsel pointed out in his brief that during cross-examination, there was testimony by me on that topic, and so there was no need to segregate. Had there been an obligation to segregate, any error by the failure to segregate was waived by the appellee when they failed to object at the charge conference. There was no objection made to the submission of the attorney's fees question. There was no objection made to an alleged need to segregate or failure to segregate. And by failing to make that objection, that complaint, if any, was waived. And there is a case almost directly on point. It's a Fort Worth Court of Appeals. That is Hawkins v. Walker, 233 Southwest 3rd, 380. It appears at page 398.